Nathan. Welcome to Emmaus. Want to especially welcome those of you online. By the way, today is the 310th Sunday that we have live streamed this 9 o'clock gathering. It started the first week of this thing we called the shutdown. Anybody remember that? And we've been going ever since. And recently, there have been over 200 people who have been participating in our gatherings online. So if you're there with us today, welcome. I'm glad that you're here in this way. It's not the full experience, but this is, I know, a welcomed option for many. So welcome to those of you who are joining us online, and welcome to all of you who are here today. I'm glad that you joined us today, and I hope that this is a meaningful and powerful experience for you. Today is going to be a little different than our typical Sunday, and it's an especially great Sunday for you to be here. Because today, especially if you're new to Emmaus, because today is our annual community update. As you came in today, I hope that you received a copy of a printed piece. Raise your hand if you need one of these, and we will get one to you. Looks like everyone was able to get one. One over here in the back. Thanks, Dimitri. So I imagine you've got a chance to look at this, to kind of take a quick peek at it. This is not only, 2025 was not only our 20th year as a church community, but according to several measurements, it was our strongest and most effective year as a church to date. Each year, according to our church bylaws, we gather for a meeting dedicated to reporting on our shared life, our shared resources, and our shared ministry. And we've done this differently throughout the years. This year, we wanted to provide a printed report for 2025 for last year, and we want to shift quickly to casting vision for our church communities next year, for 2026. So we'll do that. But before we jump to 2026, I want to take just 2 minutes and highlight a few things about last year. As you look at this printed page, here's just a few things I want you to see. I hope that you will see that we are committed to transparency, because transparency is a critical part of trust. It's an ingredient of trust. And trust is just an essential piece of real community. And so when you see this page, one of the things that I hope it communicates is transparency. A second thing, I hope you see a demonstrable value placed on community, both with the pictures and with the numbers. I think you can tell a lot about what an organization values by paying attention to what the organization counts. We mostly count people, and we count gatherings of people, like home groups and serve teams, and we count ways that people serve people, like bringing meals to people who are in need. So I hope this page communicates that community is a really important part of Emmaus Church community, that comes through. And then finally, especially if you're newer to Emmaus, I wanted you to see our whole staff team, both the church staff team and the staff of the Foundry Youth Center, in one place all together. The Foundry Youth Center is our 10-year-old youth center that now operates on campus at Glenn Edwards Middle School and at Lincoln High School. And what I hope that you see is that as you see the pictures of everybody there, I want you to understand that the church, our church, is involved in so many things and so many places beyond just Sunday mornings in this room, okay? So, and I think that those three things and so many more are just worth a moment of celebration. Can we just thank the Lord for the blessing of what he's given us to celebrate? All right, what's next? What's next? The board and the staff team and I have spent considerable time in the second half of last year working to discern God's direction for the next season of our church community, the first part of our third decade of ministry. Since we started this church more than 20 years ago, we've been grounded and guided by three core purposes. And those core purposes are transformation and community and compassion. All three of those purposes are rooted in the Emmaus Road story, the story of the first Easter morning recorded at the end of Luke's gospel. And we still believe in these three core purposes. We still want to pursue these with our whole hearts. We wanted, however, to discern and to articulate a very specific and very practical mission for 2026, which identifies a tangible way to pursue these purposes for every single one of us. And that mission, in a word, is table. This year, we want to focus on the table as a place of welcome and also as a place of becoming, as a place of formation, a place where we both belong and we grow, a place of rest and a place of nourishment, a place of beginning and a place of maturing, a physical place where we can have a holy experience with God and with one another. And I'm very excited about the various ways that our church will live into the pursuit of this mission in 2026. But I'm most hopeful about the way this mission will bear fruit and will be engaged in our homes. I'm very hopeful about experiencing a shared meal as a way of being welcomed and known and loved, as an experience of belonging in our homes. And I'm also very hopeful about sharing a shared meal as a way of learning and growing in the way of Jesus. And as I've carefully considered in the last few months why I'm so hopeful for this mission, for the potential power of remembering and refocusing on the table, there are a bunch of reasons I'm hopeful for this, but two rise to the surface above the rest. The first is, when I consider the life of Jesus, I just see that he is always eating. As this bumper video shared, the context for so many of his teachings is the table, the place where so many of his healings happen. Is around in the experience of the shared meal. Followers of Jesus ask follow-up questions around the table, and they gain better understanding, and their trust in Christ increases. And those who are skeptical about Jesus, and those who are curious about Jesus, and even those who are anti-Jesus are welcomed at the table. And so, often, not every single time, but often, as food is shared, divisiveness softens and growth begins. And of course, the point isn't actually the table. It's all that happens around the table and at the table. And I went so long without even recognizing this fact that so much of the ministry of Jesus happens around the table. But once I noticed it, it's one of those things that once you see it, you can't not see it. It's just constantly throughout the Gospels. It's like this place of transformation and this place of welcome is the same place. It's the table. So the first reason I'm hopeful about this table, especially in the context of our homes, is that Jesus is so often doing good work there. The good work of welcoming, of teaching, of healing, and of loving people at the table. That's the first reason I'm hopeful. The second reason I'm hopeful is that the table, or hopeful about the table, is my own experiences at the table and what people, others have shared with me about their experiences around the table. Let me just give two examples from my own life, and then I'm going to ask Pastor Melissa to share a third. Here's my first example. I have the very fortunate blessing of remembering lots of time eating meals with my family around the table. And I realize that is a really strong and powerful gift. Mostly I remember the food. I remember some especially painful moments around lima beans. That's just the worst, and the requirement to finish your peas. But I also remember some just amazing experiences with some of my favorite meals. Like my mom used to make this homemade pizza burger loaf, which is just about the most wonderful thing in the world to eat. I have lots of memories about food. I also remember family. Of course, I was a kid, so I didn't appreciate like I do now the blessing of having the whole family together at the table. It was way more basic and primal than that, right? But I did have a sense of gratitude. I do remember I felt good at the table. It was a busy place, a full place. I felt like, I remember how it felt. It felt good. It felt grounding. Especially on these occasional Saturday mornings where my mom would make pancakes and breakfast would just stretch long into the morning. It felt warm and it felt relaxed. It felt good to be there. And my sisters and my brother and I would try to stretch that one out as long as possible because we knew chores were coming after breakfast. So we just leaned into that as long as we could. And now, it wasn't all warm and fuzzy. There was a strong emphasis on manners at the table. growing up. And I appreciate that now, but I didn't at the time. Our family was big, so there's almost always a baby, and the baby's often fussy. And so I'm certainly not trying to paint some perfect picture, some ideal picture of the table or the meal. Our food was simple growing up, very simple. And our family time was probably pretty, pretty typical. But my point is that I remember it because it happened. And I remember it as a good thing. I remember it as a place of belonging and a place where what mattered most was that we were all together. Leah, our kids' ministry director, shared some research with me on the impact of family meals. There's a lot. I'm just going to pick up two quick points. A couple of research-backed benefits of families eating together. A 2004 study quoted in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine showed that those who ate with their families at least three or four times a week had lower rates of both addiction and anxiety. My question is, why is that? And this article offered a very simple explanation. Dinner becomes the place where the brain receives the signal, I am not alone. 2006 study in the Journal of Adolescent Health showed that regular and predictable dinners increase teenagers' sense of self-worth. And the study suggests it's not about the duration of the meal, it's about the structure of the meal. And it listed specifically, and this is 06, so it's pre-iPhone at least, but no gadgets, one question, not about school, and one small ritual like a prayer, or like sharing a high and a low from the day, or like a short reading. In fact, it's challenging to identify anything that has a more positive effect on any person's mental health and sense of self than gathering, even a few times a week, around a table for a shared meal with others. My second personal example is from July, and this is just remarkable to me because several things have an oversized impact from your childhood, wouldn't you agree? Several things that you experience in childhood, it just they shape you at an uncommon level when you're a kid. But only a few things have the capacity to carry that freight well into your 50s. And one of these few things is the experience of sharing a meal with other people. I spent several days at a monastery in Italy in July before starting off on a big long walk. And when I arrived, it was late in the afternoon, and the guest master welcomed me into my room and at the newly completed guest house, which included a dining room. And he said something about dinner in broken English, and I frankly misunderstood what he said. I didn't get it quite. And then the next day, he found me again, and he said, "We missed you at dinner. We missed you at cena last night." And I thought he was just being polite, that he was just offering an open invitation. So I agreed to join them that night. And after the pre-dinner prayer service, one of the monks came down out of the choir and nodded and gestured to me to come with him. We went through this big door, and there were these two monks that were standing like doorkeepers there in the entryway into the dining room. They both smiled at me and nodded their heads. And then I went and took my seat, and I noticed by my plate my name written on a wooden napkin ring. And it was like seeing my name at this place at the table had this surprising emotional impact on me. I thought, oh, you were expecting me. You were expecting me, me specifically. And you've set a place for me. You thought of me. You planned for me. And you are right now in this moment welcoming me to eat with you, to be part of this experience with you. The monks at this monastery eat in silence. So nobody said a single word to me. And yet they communicated this message with clarity. It is good, Nathan, that you are here with us. I felt so honored to be invited. I felt valued in their welcome and was surprisingly moved by this simple detail of seeing Nathan written on this napkin ring. It was a concrete affirmation. You belong here with us at the table. I've asked Pastor Melissa to share a third story about the power, the impact.
It's very much in a similar vein. I just wanted to share a little bit about the power of a prepared table. This Christmas, I went to my mother-in-law's for Christmas, as we try to do every now and again. And she told me that morning, she was getting the food ready. She's like, your job today is to prepare the table, and it needs to be the best table ever. Now, at my house, that would be rough to do, but at her house, she has crystal and silver and fine china and all kinds of things. So I was just playing. She bought flowers that I was to arrange. And so I spent a significant amount of my time that day setting the table. Everyone had, you know, multiple, I had to look up, like, where do you put the butter knife and, like, the dessert fork and all that kind of stuff. And there was a cup and three different glasses at every table. So by the time the place setting was done, you know, it was about yay wide. But knowing this was coming, this year and our focus on the table, what it really got me thinking about is the power of a prepared table, not just having, you know, a Joanna Gaines, Martha Stewart moment, because please don't hear that in this conversation, but the power of looking at it spiritually, a table as being a place of formation, the table as being a place where you aren't just nourished physically, but that your soul and your spirit are nourished, and it is a place for questions and laughter and a significant place for spiritual formation. And so it was thinking not about just me coming to the table to receive, but how do I set the table so that others can receive? How do I host at a table spiritually so that others are being formed by Jesus, that others are being formed in his way? Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to take it from there.
Good. Yeah. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. So here in, here's our 2026 mission in a sentence. In 2026, Emmaus will cultivate a welcoming table-centered way of discipleship, guiding every person into a weekly table rhythm that invites neighbors and friends to experience Christian faith and community. Let's do it one more time. In 26, Emmaus will cultivate a welcoming table-centered way of discipleship, guiding every person into a weekly table rhythm that invites neighbors and friends to experience Christian faith and community. One of the results of this mission is to make a practical difference in the lives of others by sharing the hope and the love of Jesus in tangible ways, like we're already doing in so many ways. For instance, this is what we're already doing on the middle school and the high school campus through the Foundry Youth Center. As kids find community, a place of welcome, caring adults who have expected their arrival and are glad that they've come, and join them in all kinds of activities around tables. This is what we're already doing in Came to Believe, which is our 12-step recovery program that meets every Thursday in the cottage right behind the theater here, as people join for support, mutual understanding, and healing around a table. And we just frankly long to see more of that. And we want to see that dispersed all over Placer County. We're going to start this really slowly. As a church, we'll begin by considering the table, reconsidering the table, remembering and imagining the possibilities of this simple piece of furniture that almost certainly exists in some form in every one of your houses. And then as individuals, here's the first step. The first step is to work with those in your household or to work with those close neighbors and friends if you live alone, to identify one meal time during the week that will be scheduled and honored as a shared mealtime around the table. It doesn't need to be long, doesn't need to be fancy, doesn't need to cost a lot of money. Quesadillas are a great option, in my opinion. It doesn't need to include a big relational breakthrough. There doesn't need to be some kind of high-pressure, high-stakes conversation. It doesn't need to be especially fun. It's okay if the baby cries the whole time or the food doesn't turn out quite as you hoped. As we begin, the goal is simply to start or to restart or to refocus around a very powerful habit, which is a shared meal at the table, free from the TV, free from the phones, free from constant getting up, getting down, the interruptions, even if it's just a brief time, sitting down together at the table. I think it's helpful to have a little bit of structure when you're trying to do something. So, you know, did we just do it? Did that work? Was that kind of what we were trying to do? So in that vein, let me just suggest that your family meal or your house meal if you live with housemates or your shared meal if you live alone and are gathering with a few neighbors, just include three things. First, a beginning, and second, a middle, and third, an end. The beginning could be something as simple as just a prayer. Thank you, Lord, for this time around this table. Thank you for this food. The beginning could include the lighting of a candle. The beginning, maybe, if you have kids at home, could be a singing a song. This is our family meal song. We're going to sing this together as we sit down for this meal. The middle could be just one question that everybody engages in, that everybody responds to. Our go-to in our house is highs and lows. What was the best part of your day? The part of the day for which you're the most grateful? And what was the low? What was the most disappointing thing or a sad thing or something that just you were set, that didn't work out the way you hoped it would? The point of the middle is not to interrupt the meal. It's just to provide something to talk about. If having something to talk about will kind of help move the meal along. So you have a beginning, very simple, and a middle, and then an end. And the end could be just as simple as thanking everyone for coming. It could be another prayer, Lord, thanks for this time we gathered together. It could be, would you all help me clean up for 15 minutes? It could be, you're free to stay, but you're also welcome to go. Thanks for joining us. It could be, now let's take out our phones and let's confirm a time to do this again next week. For me, growing up, it was, thanks for dinner, Mom. May I please be excused? Like it was one big sentence, may I please be excused? I said it really fast. The idea here is simply to establish a set time with the beginning and a middle and an end. That's just our first step. So I'm super excited about this because it's so simple and yet it's so powerful. And I'm excited about it as a framework for a deep sense of belonging and becoming more like Jesus for the sake of others. Amen. All right, I want to invite Rich to join me up here for a minute, and we're going to talk briefly about our shared finances.
Yes. Although we wanted to primarily focus looking forward during this annual update, we did also want to just briefly look back at 2025 and provide just a little report on kind of what happened. Nate already mentioned this 2025 at a glance. Definitely take a look at this later on. These are the things that we really talk about on like a weekly basis, like for instance as a staff. These are the things that we so often focus on as our kind of primary metrics, if you will. However, we also obviously track our shared resources, finances, and whatnot. So go ahead and flip your page to the backside. I saw a lot of you peeking at the backside, by the way. Already, so. But in the top left-hand corner, you'll see a graph that looks like this at the top. Yes. So this community, actually, go back one. This community raised a whopping $1.2 million in 2025, which is an incredible number, much higher than any year before. Roughly 950,000 or 1,000 of that was came in the form of tithes and offerings. Another 200,000 came through the youth center, and then an additional 77,000 came in designated funds. Those are kinds of things like when we raise money for AIM, for instance, that doesn't come in as tithe and offering. We set that aside very specifically for them. And one of my favorite stats of all is the $315,000 that was given away. This looks like an old chart, doesn't it? This is crazy. So take a look at the one. Yes, I'm like, wait a second. All those numbers are off. So this is last year. Yeah, look, we went up by 200,000 last year, or 100,000 last year, between last year and this one. So in your handout, those are the correct figures there.
Ignore the screen.
Yeah, just ignore
consult
the screen.
The handout.
And if you're online, so sorry. But we gave away a total of $371,000 this year, which is just huge. Those funds went to things like, I mentioned, AIM, local benevolence, Christian universities locally, planting churches through the Church of the Nazarene worldwide, as well as the Youth Center. Okay, now attendance. So attendance has grown just super consistently every year, just bit by bit. In 2020, there was a chaos, as we all know, in terms of, you know, who can meet here, who can meet online, et cetera. But with that 1 year as an exception, you can almost draw a line straight up and to the right by a slight margin every year that this church has been here. So you may have noticed that our 9 a.m. is a bit full, but we actually do still have space in our 11 a.m. Just kind of keep that in mind as which service you decide to come to or invite friends to. And then finally, I wanted to mention that we ended 2025 with a slightly more income than expenses, as we have done every year here, keeping the tradition of being in the black, which is great. And with giving in attendance, these numbers, when you just kind of take a step back and look at it as a whole, it just shows us a strong consistency without really huge bumps and dips. It's stability with slight growth, or as I told Nate yesterday, it's non-stagnant stability. It's stability, but not just going nowhere. Mm-hmm. It's a slight increase pretty consistently. Okay? Thank you for your generosity. We, as Nate mentioned, we highly value transparency. So if you have specific questions like I would have if I went to a church, ask me. I'd love to answer them. I also don't want to bore you to death with numbers for all of you more artistic types. So, all right.
Thanks, Rich. Thank you.